Yeah, one actually of them does.
Shook Excel. Method.
Mics are live.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, everyone. Victor it Matt. Is...
Trademark pending.
It is... Are you done? Everyone's good to go? Can we open this? Okay. Good morning, everyone. It's Friday, January 24th, 2020. It's 9:01 a.m. I'm Commissioner Brian Crashes, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchek, Commissioner Randy Christman, Victor Shook, and John Hsu from staff. This is a work session on renewable resource cost recovery mechanisms. And I don't have the three case numbers in front of me.
You want them?
Yeah,
you can read them from here.
Just from the record real quick. So it's PU19-329, PU19-328, and PU19-355. All right. We want to start. So we're going to compare the three mechanisms and essentially...
Oh, you might have missed this one.
Two mechanisms. Let's see, do we have four?
No, the three... One of these is not... 3-2... One of these was a different... 3-2-8 is not part of this.
Okay. 3-2-8 is wrong. Then PU-19-387. So.
Okay. Now we got it.
All right. So... Are we still talking about three different mechanisms, or we essentially want to talk about the two different mechanisms? We've got the Victor method. We've got the levelized cost method. Of course, there's the standard PTC treatment that is currently in place. So basically, it is three mechanisms. Thoughts?
I'll just add to your summary. I was finding something, so maybe you said it and I missed it. The reason we have the three cases, they all, in a normal cycle, although we're bordering on kind of late into it, have their annual renewable resource rider adjustments, and we're looking at a new way of calculating that. And probably, I hope at least, we are consistent with all the companies on how we do it. But anyway, that's why we're dealing with the three cases.
Okay. So with that said, good point. Are we really, we can start if anyone has questions, I suppose, with any of the methods.
I think we should, or, Mr. Chairman, just have them go through the comparisons of the on each for each company. I think it would be helpful for staff to walk through what the, because really the only thing we're looking at or waiting for in terms of new information that we can discuss the various pros and cons of each, but is the rate comparisons for each one on each company, which we got since our last meeting. So that's the new information, and then
sure.
It was just a matter of talking through what we want to do.
Okay, yeah, no, that makes sense.
Oh, go ahead, Victor. No, I'll let Victor run through this. I just read through these this morning. However, his advocacy in this proceeding, what I think is probably appropriate in this situation is allow them to reiterate what's in the filings.
Yeah.
And beyond that, probably have some limitation and provide the opportunity to have any, if a company wants to provide a follow-up after this as well, that they are able to, and I'll take care of all that.
Sure.
Okay.
Because Victor's advocacy, and yeah, so he's just going to run through the facts of their filings.
Yep. So I don't know which one you have up, but we can start with MDU if that works out, 19355. So a couple of points to note in reviewing their filing. There's four different categories. There's the as filed, which is as they filed it, standard PTC, which the difference between those two is the standard PTC, there is a true-up amount of $2.8 million that was removed from the remaining three categories. So the difference between as filed and standard PTC removes a $2.8 million true-up and kind of pushes it off to a future period.
Is that because we wouldn't do the true-ups in the other three?
No, it's not necessarily that we couldn't or wouldn't. They simply took it out for... to make the calculations
more pure.
Yeah. So
okay.
It makes for better percentage comparison between three options.
Yeah. All right.
It's a considerable true up.
Uh-huh. That's a good plan.
So that's one thing to note. So because of that, you might see the some of the percentages change a little bit more than or in a different way than you may or may not be expecting. So it's something to be aware of. So getting into the actual charts here. So this is all a year one, so our 2020 comparison.
Victor, just to reiterate kind of so I'm looking at this correctly as we move forward, I'm going to ignore as filed.
Okay.
If we're just so that I can understand the differences between each of the methodology. Would
Certainly.
That be a fair way to do it?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And then before I get in, I guess one other quick point is the changes are relative to current rates. So
okay.
Current renewable rider that's in place, this is how much of a change you can expect for each of those classes. So on the residential class, the as filed would have been an increase of 75 cents per month. The removal of that true up would be a reduction of 50 cents per month.
Okay, I hate to belabor this, but we can't really look at it that way because it doesn't include the true up. So this wouldn't actually be the rate this time.
Correct. It would be more like the as filed is really what it would be this time.
Right. So, but it wouldn't be fair to look at levelized return and say this time it would be 0.37 versus 0.75 because it doesn't include the true-up.
Correct.
Okay.
If we decide to do the true-up, you would have to add the difference between 0.75 and minus 0.5 to the 0.37. So really, if you want to compare the levelized return to the as filed, am I correct in saying that it would really be like $1.57?
Yes.
So, but again, rather than focus on what it would be this time, if we're just looking at how the different methodologies affect the same case, we can just kind of forget about what it is going to be actually this year and compare the three methodologies.
Sure. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So you can see the dollar impacts between the different methods there. You know, obviously the levelized, as we were expecting in these early years, it's an increase. And then directly below the actual dollar impacts is their percentage changes. Now, these percentage changes are not of just the renewable rider. It's their total bill. So this is considering the basic service charge and any other charges that are on that bill. So you can really see what actual rate impact this has. So kind of going to the worst case, 3.77%, that would be a increase in the total customer bill of that much.
Okay.
And then each of the the other categories works similarly. But you will see, so residential and small general, they kind of follow the same pattern of, you know, increases and decreases. Large general, this one seems to be a little odd because levelized is showing a reduction.
Why is it?
So that would be because, it appears to be because of the true up. So because they're throwing that little wild card in there a little bit, large general has a larger piece of the pie, as it were, for true ups and things of that nature. So removing that is what's causing their rate to go down. Mm-hmm. So, and then by the time you get to the large contract customer, you know, the levelized PTC version grows up to, you know, a point of 5.22% of an increase in their total bill. You know, and it's, you know, a couple $100,000 annually.
How many large contract customers are there?
Well, contract customers, I think, but we have what, three or is it four?
I thought four.
I think it is four.
And
so we have the state capital. We have Tesoro
that place in Williston
that we just
and the one down by
the
Martin.
The Clay
I'm
folks.
To recall the names.
Minerals Technology Incorporated.
No,
the one we just approved the other day, right?
That's the parent company.
American Colloid.
American Colloid. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So they'd get a $21,000 a month.
Correct.
And it would be nice to have this chart too, but am I right in imagining if we had the full 20-year layout to 2040 and 2026, that spike for these is going to probably be close to a six-figure per month spike, right?
I would assume. Well,
per month.
Per month, I don't know. Maybe on an annualized basis.
Well, this is when you look at what the levelized PTCs does.
So
up front is smaller than what it is 6 years out, and this is 21,000 here. It would be, if the change isn't made, they are going to be socked in 6 years.
Yeah, so looking at the chart from the informal we had yesterday, you can kind of see, this is the jump we're talking about now.
Mm-hmm.
Or we have a jump in.
Yeah, so it wouldn't necessarily be a bigger jump.
At yeah, I guess like not. I was thinking it was bigger. I'm thinking of some of the other ones. So.
Yeah, and some of the other charts kind of demonstrate a little bit better the whole picture. You know, MDUs is more of a 1 year, where some of the other charts show all of the years. So,
mm-hmm.
But I will say, overall, they have a similar percentage change. They're not all the same because they're all companies are set up a little bit differently, but the percentage change is similar. So is there any questions on this one? Like I said, this
as much as I have disliked doing something different than the others, because they're contract customers that are that, would it be a possibility if we chose to do the complete levelized system for all three kind of to make one exception and that is for the four contract customers and MDU because of this pretty enormous spike? Or
where do you make up the difference, like if you don't make them pay? Well, where does it come from?
No, that they would use the other, like the Victor method.
Yeah, but there's the revenue requirement wouldn't be met then.
That's right. Yeah, it's probably a bad idea.
It'd be messy.
I was thinking.
I mean, you have to take that revenue from somebody else and add theirs, increase theirs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Disregard that.
Okay.
But we can come back to that, I guess, but, or maybe we want to talk through each one. There's still the option of doing one company differently than the other. I mean, I think it's preferable for the same, but I don't know. I think that should still be, it shouldn't be boxed in by thinking it has to be the exact same method on every single project for all the companies.
We think when we get to the end of this, though, we're going to hypothetically have different methods, then you throw in some exceptions, then you start determining which facilities should be included, which is one of my big questions. Facilities with 2 or 3 years left of depreciation, do we even want to look at them, for example, or do we just let them finish out applying the same accounting practices that we have? And that's one of my fears of this whole project is we started with, and it's a good concept. Why should future ratepayers subsidize current ratepayers? And then but one of the challenges, that's where we started, and then we backed into formulas to solve that. It's not always. You usually start with, on the other end, and to achieve an outcome, we're starting with an outcome. And that makes sense. But anyway, I think we just have to be really careful that if we start saying, well, we'll do this one a little differently here, we're going to add this over here and this, it's I just think it'll be a real headache to try and implement. And, you know, do we do more harm than good? Because then how do you treat other regulatory assets and other unique sets of circumstances that invariably will come up from a consistency standpoint? So if this isn't clean and streamlined, I think, then how do you keep track of, well, now we've got another regulatory asset that's getting a tax incentive of some kind or an early retirement, and how do you treat it to be consistent with this, which is actually applying an inconsistent method to? Well, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think I want to keep things on the table for now. I'm not saying that's where I want to end up. I just don't want to be boxed in by saying it has to be a certain way while we're just exploring it.
Sure. Maybe let's move on to the Otter Tail one. That one, it gives us a full picture of the years and really a better feel overall of how the methods play out. So page 2 of Otter Tail's filing shows the table 1 is for the residential class and table 2 is large general service.
So, Victor, can I interrupt you for a second, please?
Sure.
Is it Otter Tail? Am I on the wrong?
Yeah, I'm having trouble finding which one you're looking at.
Is it 387?
What?
It is. Case it is, number? Yes, 387.
Why is that not docketed? And
What document do you have?
It might not have been docketed yet because they came in so late.
Okay. MDA. Well, they just came in this morning, so.
Oh.
Something that came here today?
Yes.
Is it this?
It looks no.
January 22nd?
Nope.
I don't have it then.
Jack will get us.
Okay, that answers the question.
So while he's doing that, we can move to Excel if you want. This one's just a little bit, you know, each one of them presents a little bit differently.
I don't. They probably don't have the Excel one then either. That came in.
I do. In it. That one I have. This one with the table.
I think you know.
Oh, whoops. Hang on. That's
an Excel. Yeah, Excel. Yeah, there we go. This is Excel.
But is it on the computer?
This one?
Nope.
That's there.
The one Julie has one. Is what?
It's docket number 15.
Okay. Yeah, it's not loaded either. That one should be loaded by now. Oh, 23rd as well.
Yeah. The paper.
Oh, man, I should have done color. I'm sorry.
Well, the lines are different.
Oh, I have it.
You do? Okay.
I do, too.
Oh, never mind.
He doesn't.
Ryan doesn't.
Okay.
Jack.
Okay, so we want to look at the Otter Tail one. Then.
Oh,
is that what?
I don't have that one. I might have it.
I'll keep mine over here so you can see color a little bit.
I'm colorblind anyway, so that doesn't help me.
Yeah?
No.
You did.
Ease of viewing.
Oh, very nice.
Okay, I don't. Did one of you guys have mine?
No, the other one.
Yes, that one.
Yeah, that one I don't have. I know I got multiple copies of the different one from them, but thanks, Jack.
Okay. Otter Tail, page 2. So, as I had mentioned, this one, table 1 is the residential class. This is monthly bills for the average customer for the entire time period. Table 2 is large general service. They don't have quite as many categories of customers to split out as the others, just kind of due to their territory size and the type of customers they have. So the you know, the graphs as far as their angles and things are pretty much the same between the two categories. And then the percentage of bill change is similar percentages to what MDU's customers were seeing, where we're in that 4 to 5% range for the straight levelized method versus the, you know, everyone's calling it a little something a little bit different here. We're in the shook look now.
Good job, Otter Tail. So they've only got two categories of rate payers?
Two major categories.
All right. I'm worried about like a few oddballs though. Like, are there a few, like, four of the big customers like MDU has that would be slammed? I mean,
I don't believe so. Okay. I'm just looking through here. No, their filing doesn't mention any other categories that would. Somehow more negatively impact another class of service.
We can speak about this generally, and then we could follow up with Otter Tail to make sure that that isn't the case as well.
Okay.
But the one thing, I mean, you do know that if the average is 150, there are some that are fairly substantially higher than that, you know. So
yes.
I don't know what their biggest things would be, you know, whether it's some grain processing facilities down there on Wahpeton or just, I don't know what it would be.
Right.
But something is the biggest, and it'll be a significant hit. But if not, boy, look at that hit they have coming in 2030.
Right. This is a good one to show that, you know, while there would be an initial, you know, considerable jump in rates on the straight levelized now, that jump is far less than what would be coming down the road under the normal method.
Can I ask a quick question, just because I'm under the assumption, and I think this is right, but each company included every facility currently receiving a PTC, whether they had 1 year left or 10 years left,
no.
Or did they mix it up?
No. So this is only the facilities that are in their renewable riders. So to back up to MDU quickly, MDU mm-hmm. has all of their wind farms in the renewable rider at present. So they have older wind farms that are at the end of their PTC life. I think they have a couple of them have a small portion left of 2020 PTCs. What I had discussed with them, since it's just one partial year left, just continue to do that as we always have. We're not messing with that for the very small impact that it has. So only wind farms that have longer periods left, which would, in MDU's case, be Thunder Spirit 1 and 2. Thunder Spirit 1, I believe, has 6 years left with PTCs, and 2 has 9.
Their chart that they provided the other day is helpful in that respect because it breaks them out, this one. Because which... this one is Thunder. It shows how Thunder Spirit.
Yeah, no. I want to know. Although they're all the same, and I think the answer is no.
No, they're not all the same in which wind farms are where. So, in MDU's case, that's mm-hmm. the spread of wind farms.
Right.
In Otter Tail's case, it's one single wind farm, the Maricourt project, and this is its entire lifespan from when it goes on into service to the end of the 25-year expected life.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the rest of theirs are on base, right?
Correct.
Okay.
But am I right? The only exception, though, is MDUs with that in the old farm that ends in 2020 with PTCs. The rest of the wind farms for the various companies are in here, and none of them are even 2 or 3 years. There's not a close call. There's the one exception with MDU that's 1 year, and then everything else is significant more and in here.
Yes, that's it.
There's not a bunch of close calls.
Absolutely. I would agree with that completely.
Okay. Well, I hesitate to throw this out now, but I'll hold it for when we're kind of talking more generally. down there so I don't get it.
So the worst spread for Otter Tail on this under the method you used, Victor, would be right around 20, 29, I think would be the greatest gap of just a little over $2.
So you're talking about the standard PTCs versus the Shukluk?
Correct.
Yes, that would be the largest 220-ish, difference.
220-ish, 230, whatever. I mean, I'm just eyeballing it. But.
Yep.
But marginal at first.
Yeah, marginal at first, and yeah, then it grows to 2029 to that difference. I would agree with about $2. Yeah. But then a couple years later, when we get to 2031, it looks like we're $4 the opposite direction.
Yeah,
with that comparison.
Right.
Any questions on Otter Tails? Okay. Then we can move on to Excel, which is a slightly different presentation. So here we are calling levelized credit method and the Victor method, trademark pending.
Is that this one?
Yes, ma'am.
That one I don't.
That's 15 on the docket, if you want to try that.
I'm going to go grab it. No, it wasn't docket.
Here, I have an extra one of those, Brian.
Yeah. This is the downfall to relying on technology.
Yeah, the docketing takes a bit.
So in Excel's first couple, so the first table is the levelized credit method. And we have residential, small commercial, and large commercial. and we can see there, what they have done is shown a 2020 impact and a 2025 impact. The 2020 impact is a smaller percentage, 1.6 to 1.9% of total bill. And the 2025 is slightly higher. And if you wanted to... This is where it's helpful to kind of compare those charts from yesterday's informals. It helps a little bit to put it in perspective. So in the, we're talking about 2020 right now, which we're really not at the top of that ramp quite yet. So we're kind of halfway up that slope here.
Mm-hmm. On the green line?
On all of them.
All the lines, really. Okay.
So we're really just not quite at any of the peaks yet, so that's why that percentage is a little bit less. All those lines are much closer together in that year. And we probably get to a peak around 2021, 22 on that chart. They didn't show that year necessarily, but they did show 2025, which the spread is a little bit greater. At that point, you can see the divergence of the three methods. So
this, what's their field of projects that are a part of this? Because they have
wind farms that were placed into service since the last rate case, which was 2013.
I think that's right.
2012, 13, somewhere in that time period.
I think it was around 2012.
Yeah, right. Sounds right.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't have anything that's just at that very end of the PTC life.
Yep.
They just kind of have a whole mishmash of new stuff and a little bit older stuff. So,
all of theirs are in here.
No,
all of their wind farms are in. Which ones are in base rates?
They absolutely have older wind farms that are in base rates.
Okay,
so I don't know which farm specifically.
Okay, but there's a bunch of them on this rider.
Yes.
Yeah.
There is. Eight or.
This one adds like four or something, doesn't it?
It's interesting with all of their projects.
Oh, there's
many
eight,
of them now that we're considering. Okay. I mean, they by far have the most.
Oh, yes.
Say, in terms of facilities, and yet when you look at the difference, you know, to the customer bill, it's less than $2.
And it's...
We're only 5% of their system.
That's kind of the qualifier with Accel. Yeah. You know, we're...
Right.
While they have so much more wind, we're just such a small piece of that pie. You know, with MDU, we are, I think we're on 70% of their system.
I fully understand that. I was thinking about it, but you would still think that a customer that's getting, you know, a high percentage of their generation would be impacted more, regardless if, because it's all proportionate. It doesn't mean that they only have 5% as large a bill as, you know, people that live outside of North Dakota.
Correct. They don't have a smaller bill than other states would necessarily, but I haven't done the math necessarily, but yeah. I think you could maybe say the percentage of wind they get in the renewable rider for Accel is likely less than that of an MDU customer, even though the amount of wind in that rider is... Okay. Much less.
I'll also remember the point they made that I hadn't initially thought of. There's all of this, the impact on average is less because so much higher percentage of their customers have natural gas heating. So many fewer have electric heat.
Yep.
That just brings
a good distinction. Yeah, because we had got into that during the informals. The average customer bill is different between the
sure.
I thought their impact, though. So I misunderstood.
They use less.
I get that part. I thought they excluded that, though. I thought they just looked at electric use outside.
Yeah. So there's no natural gas comparisons in here of any kind, but of the natural gas availability.
Yeah.
The amount of kilowatt hours the average customer and the different companies varies.
Yeah.
So I think Otter Tail was at 1,000 kilowatt hours. MDU was 894.
So their comparison was whether or not you had electric heat or didn't have electric heat. They're all in the same pool in terms of what it's going to impact. I thought they had two groups, one people that used electric heat and then one that didn't use.
My recollection is that it was how it worked, but it was a small percentage of the ones that didn't use, and so they went with the larger group they thought was a more accurate depiction of the average customer.
So here we're looking at the larger group.
Okay. That's exactly what I recall as well.
Okay, good.
Okay, so again, getting back to that debt table, the levelized credit method showing the difference in 2020 and then 2025. The next table down.
So, but again, yes. To restate, Victor, 2025. I'm looking at the chart. That really wasn't the peak time.
No.
Nope. 2020 isn't either. So it would have been like 2021 or two.
On the PTC treatment.
Agreed. And some of their further later charts get into that a little bit.
To show the maximum impact, you'd have to look at that peak year.
Yeah. Right? I think what this is showing, this is showing. First of all, the 2020 impact is what the current impact is going to be. The 2025, that looks to be on that chart. That's probably where, under the standard method, the rates are the least.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I think that's what they're trying to show.
Yeah, we're really just looking at what's the spread between the current and proposed methods.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about the spread and the timing of
that. Yep. And then the... the Victor method here, the percentages, obviously, as we would expect, don't really go up quite so high for the impacts in 2020 or 2025. So let's move on to their further sheets. It kind of...
I think the extra box that would have been nice to have here would have been the 2031 impact and change.
Yes.
When you've seen some big... negative numbers.
Yes. You can see those a little bit more. So if we go to page 2, this is the percent change in bill. Now, and they're showing the levelized and the Victor method here. Now, one thing to keep in mind when you're looking at this, the zero line is intended to be the standard PTC treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay,
it's kind of changing it where on other charts, the Victor line kind of goes straight. This is kind of pretending that I guess it's not pretending. This is an accurate depiction of what they're showing. It just
It's a flat line depiction of this green line, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's
a comparison to that, up and down. Yeah.
Correct.
That's actually helpful, I think. I like it because it shows you where you are going, you know, more and where
just kind of see that percent of bill change. You know, so this is the large commercial class. Again, you know, we're seeing that in the first couple of years, the change is much smaller than, you know, we kind of max out in the 2021 to 2025 range for the percent increase change. And then 2029, we really start dropping down. And then, you know, from 2031 on, the levelized and Victor methods result in reductions.
Mm-hmm. Large commercial class.
And then if you want to see them all kind of side by side, if you flip to page 3, they have them kind of stacked up, residential, small commercial, and large commercial. And similar to what the other charts we were seeing, the graphs look similar. The percentages are slightly different. You know, kind of the max on residential there is about 3% on the levelized. Gets up to about 3.5% for small commercial and nearing 4% for large commercial.
Okay. Globalized residential. 4%.
So all three companies, the numbers as presented assume that none of these generating assets ever make their way back into base. When I'm looking out at these charts, that you know, for some it doesn't happen.
I think what we had talked about so far is the current plan probably would be to leave all of these assets in the riders. I'm not sure that you would have to.
Right, you wouldn't have to, but that's how it's depicted. And each of the three companies, if none of them ever
went
to riders.
As long as the revenue requirements are calculated appropriately everywhere,
given what we know,
wherever they are, this is how they could function.
That's what he just asked is kind of what I've been mulling over here as we've been sitting here talking. It feels like this isn't as big of an issue when they're in base rates, how the PTCs are handled. Because we're not even talking about those projects that are on base rates.
That's correct.
Right.
So tell me why and where is the are we still having this kind of issue? Have we erased the issue of this huge spike down the road by putting them in base rates somehow, or is there going to be a spike when the PTCs go away?
If they were in base rates on year 11, if it's a considerable size wind farm for that company, you can probably pretty reasonably count on a rate case happening.
Because there's no...
Because they're not getting that PTC money in anymore.
Yeah.
So we're setting the rates, of course, in a rate case on that prospective basis with all these considerations. And so at that point, there would be a revenue shortfall, which would probably trigger a rate case at that point for another full review.
And I guess Jack, are we comfortable with that because we feel like there might be enough other factors like negating that at that time, the assets and the revenues overall might soften those spikes and we probably won't have to worry about huge spikes just for the PTCs dropping off on one or two wind farms or three.
I don't know if that's something I'd be able to answer at this point in time. I think that's always a concern. I imagine at some point in time that for some of these, it probably will trigger a rate case to an extent. That's a sizable sum of money. And a sizable spike.
I think if we look at the history with Otter Tail's last rate case,
that's
one
of
the main drivers of their it wasn't the only driver, but one of the main drivers of that. It was a larger increase than the other companies have had for quite some time, and it was partially due to the expiration of PTCs on some of their older wind farms.
That was the example I had in mind, but it's really hard to think for all of these without actually sitting down and looking at them. The only reason why Otter Tail came to mind is because that's the one we've had the opportunity to sit down and do that holistic review on recently.
Right. Well, and if you look at the Xcel portfolio, they've got, you know, eight. Three came on in 2019 and three came on in 2020. So in 2 years, six wind farms will be expiring, all of whom, you know, customers will have to be eating the additional revenue requirements for when the PTCs aren't offsetting it.
Right.
So those spikes get magnified six times. That could be significant. So might be, I mean, if we went back in time, it might have made more sense to keep them in the riders if we had been thinking this way earlier on to minimize those potential rate spikes. Is that, I mean, say no if you think that's not true.
Are you talking about if we had...
Like this keeping them in the riders and using this kind of methodology might prove to be wiser long-term versus bringing them into base rates.
Yeah, if we're concerned about that year 11 spike happening all kind of together, I think one of these methods certainly offsets that from happening.
I think, though, in fairness to us, there weren't as many coming on. They weren't as large when they were coming on. You know, remember there used to be 50-megawatt wind farms being built, 75-megawatt wind farms. And nobody else was ahead of this. It's not like we were seeing this laid out in NARUC meetings or anything like that. We didn't know at the time what we didn't know. And now I think it's more obvious, and whether it's in riders or in future rate cases, I think there's enough evidence here that I just feel it would be inappropriate to push so much of these costs out 5 to 12 years from now, when we can fix it starting now.
Well, I mean, we have to acknowledge, there's no doubt about it, this change is happening, you know, halfway across the stream already on a lot of these. Well, more than, you know, granted the projects coming on now are larger, but not all these generate power for North Dakota utilities. But I mean, when I started, there was still, what, about 3,000 megawatts on the ground, right, generating capacity. So, you know, you've got different commissions and whatnot for a long time since the first one was cited that, you know, just let them roll through. So that does create a challenge in terms of, you know, because that's another question I have. Is there a cutoff in terms of, you know, if a facility only has a year or two left or 3 years left, do we bother with it at this point since it's 70 or 80% of the depreciation? And that's not exact because it's not, you know, that precise in terms of percentages yearly, but just roughly speaking. You know, what do you do with one that's got 2 years of appreciation?
Do we have any cases like that? I thought we've gone through that.
Yeah, the only
they're
ones
all,
we had
all
were
riders.
Or the, not, yeah, we don't have.
Oh, they're all in base, I should say. Wouldn't Otter Tails be in rider?
Otter Tails, other older wind farms are all in base.
They are. Okay.
This is only their new one that is in the renewable rider.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And as we mentioned, the MDU just has those couple of older ones that have partial PTCs left for 2020. Right. We're not levelizing those in any way.
Right, and just the fact that we're able to have this conversation on MDU is due to we treated those resources differently in the last rate case that we had than we have done for the other utilities. It was kind of an anomaly in what we've done by keeping them in the rider as opposed to putting them into the base rates.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you do that because you were preparing for this, or why did we do that?
Well, I
don't remember.
I don't know if I really want to be speculating or provide all the information behind closed door from when I was advocacy staff having those discussions.
So. Yeah, that's fine. I can figure that out online.
Sure.
So MDUs, just to be clear, there's those Thunder Spirits, and Otter Tails is Maricourt.
Correct.
And XL has the 8 that they listed in our charts. It says, included in the 2020, chart number 5, resources included in 2020 RER. So that's the ones we're talking about there, and the oldest one is 2015.
Correct.
So we don't have to worry about the anomalies that Brian's referring to.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And another kind of distinction, one thing I've tried to make clear to the companies in some of their concerns were around, well, what do we do when we get a repower or another wind farm? How do we incorporate all of this? The instruction, and I think the right method to go forward, is to calculate revenue requirements on an individual wind farm by wind farm basis.
Mm-hmm.
So it keeps it clean that way so that we're not mixing a brand new wind farm with some of these, you know, 10-year-old wind farms or anything like that.
Right.
You're calculating those independently and therefore tracking their the kind of the PTC balance that we're reserving for future periods separately.
And then you'd roll up each fee into one, each
yep.
revenue
yep.
requirement.
You roll one. All of those revenue requirements up into yeah. one total renewable rider tracker.
And if you do repower, what happens to the, say, in your, whatever, where's Maricourt? That might be a good one to look at.
Sure.
Say they repower in 20, what years do we have here? 2030 or something. How far out does that one go? Yeah. What will happen then? Will that just, whatever new additional capital investments will be added on and then the schedule be recalculated?
Yes.
And they might get new PTCs?
Yeah.
I mean, you never know.
I know that's why some developers were repowering at the time that mm-hmm. they were recently to capture another set of PTCs.
Yeah.
Cause I suppose if legislation was passed to allow for more production tax credits, it could happen again.
And I have a similar question,
mm-hmm.
and so now's a good time for it. If that happens, and using that as the example, and assuming it would be in that 10 to 15 mm-hmm. year range, so then instead of their depreciation schedule going to 2045, let's say they repowered in 2030, they would probably go to start a whole new depreciation schedule to 2055. If we didn't make any changes and continued doing what we're doing now, they'd have a little spike in their revenue requirement, but not too much because they'd have new PTCs. It would go way down. They'd get 10 years out. It would spike way up. And so really, it just starts a repowering, just starts this whole thing again with the same issues in my mind. Am I right?
I would agree.
Well, would you take the remaining PTCs and extend it over the new life then? Or would you still stop them at the time that we originally calculated?
I think you can kind of make a decision at that time
okay.
how you want to treat those.
I think we would be arguing about that.
Okay.
At that point.
Yeah.
It would be inconsistent to not treat them in a similar fashion, though. They did come out.
There's a lot of ifs.
Unknowns,
right.
Yeah.
Right. It.
Well, that's one thing that we do have to keep, not that specific scenario, but there are many scenarios that will be presented a decade from now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It could be an entirely new commission at the time.
Yep.
Could be. I'm not. Anyway, so.
It could be new technology as well. For example, I did state the PTCs, but it's also the technology got better for the rotors for a lot of them as well.
So I think we have to look at this, too, in terms of, okay, this would set new precedents. And from a consistency factor, are we willing to follow through or having it the framework set up in such a way that it can be followed through? I mean, if the goal is today is to not have future rate payers subsidize current rate payers, why would that change in 10 years or 20 years or 50 years? And the answer is, in principle, it shouldn't. But there are so many unknowns that we, you know, repowering might be a smaller part of what's out there at that point in time. I just don't know.
If you look at the risks, I mean, because really what we're, the method that was chosen was just a method. There could have been a different method chosen at, back at the time, and then we'd be looking at something different. So it feels to me like we have the benefit of time to see how this is going to, a little bit of experience and time to see how, like, our current path is going to have impacts down the road. And so once you get on a, you know, we could have just stayed on that path and been consistent, or we can pick a new one that we think is better, a better glide path, and be consistent with that. So I don't worry so much about the change at this point, as long as we have good rationale for it.
And where I would worry about the change is if we continued on the current path, because the current path is basically using all available resources for the immediate time frame and worrying about the future in the future. Either of these new methods, the shook look or the completely levelized, puts at least some of this mana from DC into a piggy bank. And so if someone decides to change later, whatever change they do, there's the piggy bank to operate with. Under the current system, we just take and use everything that's available to us.
Correct.
Well, and I feel like it's more consistent, too. In addition to that, it's more consistent with how we approve these. Because we approve them and look at the costs for 30 years and 45 years or whatever. Sure. We aren't looking just today. And so it's, if it's being justified as a resource because over time the cost is low, then it feels like over those customers across time should benefit from that, not just the customers in the first 10 years. And then the other ones are picking up the tab for what is now not any longer a very cheap resource because all the subsidies are gone.
Sure.
So it feels more, that's what I like about it. It feels more true to the analysis we make on the front end in approving these resources.
The results are consistent, but the accounting practice is inconsistent.
With what?
Businesses get tax credits, they get whatever it is in a given calendar year, and they're applied, and then they work their way down to whatever their net revenue winds up being, and you know, the return on equity, all those things. That's consistent accounting practice. What we're doing is not a consistent accounting practice. It's a mechanism, though, to create consistency from a ratepayer standpoint.
Right.
You know a lot more about corporate accounting than I do. I acknowledge that, but isn't the whole concept of regulatory accounting, though, a deviation from normal accounting? Isn't that the whole point of what we do here? Yes, they have their regular accounting books that they use for taxes and for their borrowing purposes and returning money to investors, but we keep a track of regulatory accounting so that, yeah, they probably pay for these resources first year,
right?
But we make for their ratepayers who are in this monopoly, make them spread it out so that,
sure,
so that the later ratepayers are treated fairly. So I think this is what we do.
I don't disagree with that. I just don't want to. I wouldn't go on record as saying, you know, this is a consistent accounting practice, because it's not. And our regulatory view of how they have been doing the books, you know, frankly, mirrors how they've been doing the books. This could be a little different. So it's not something to get hung up on. I just think we have to be a little careful with the language. But, okay, so where are we at now?
I guess I could give a general overview of probably what I believe the sentiments of the companies are at this point in time, just as, and you guys could decide a good path going forward. It seemed, well, as you guys are well aware, Otter Tail previously requested to levelize the PTCs before, and at that point in time, the commission said no.
When was that?
I mean, that was back in 2011, maybe, was it?
2008, actually. I found the order from back then. And so R. Taylor proposed to partially levelize production tax credit over a 25-year period to smooth the effect of losing the PTC after it expires in 10 years. Parties agree the PTC should not be partially levelized as proposed. Instead, the PTC credits will be estimated and reflected in the renewable resource tracking accounts based on anticipated actual credits for each year and flowed through as a credit through the rider.
But I think even at that point, there was a that was also an agreement, I think, by staff was agreeable to that, too. But I think the commission itself at the time was not agreeable to it. They wanted the PTCs at that point in time. And so I'm obviously Otter Tail said, well, we've done this before. We already requested this before. We're happy to do it now.
Sure.
Regarding the Victor, the Shookaluk, I think they have some concerns. It's not that they're opposed to it. They're just still kind of, I think actually in their letter it says, its main concern at this time is how this method impacts additional revenue required methodology. And they're still kind of working through the details. I don't think I have to work through XL Energy's view on it because we had plenty of discussion. They like the levelized method because it's more similar to the traditional rate making method and how ISSR depreciated out with this valuation. And I think an MDU it seemed like, well, if you're going to do this either method, we'd be happy to do as well. They can go either way as long as the parameters are straight.
Should we change the word happy with willing?
Willing, yes.
Good point.
I think that's probably a more accurate description.
So then I have the one big stumbling block for me is I like the levelized better too. No offense to the Shookaluk. Because of the thing I don't like about the Shookaluk is how the almost fully depreciated asset is still being heavily paid for by the ratepayers at the end of life.
At the end of the right.
So how do you have those concerns? And the reason I don't just say, well, then let's do levelized is because, I mean, gosh, a significant, especially in those MDU customers, that's a huge bill increase. And I don't even know if that's tolerable, $20,000 a month. So that's why it's just like, I don't know. That
could have a draconian effect.
Yeah, so I think we're kind of pushed into the Shookaluk.
My thought is, well, actually, you asked a question. I think right to Victor, if you were missing something, or
do you guys have any thoughts on that concern of the Shookaluk?
Yeah, I think I kind of, I guess, from just a personal basis, which of course I'm definitely not. I'm advisory, and I'm not providing any. you guys should absolutely
advise us.
Yeah.
But I'll give you my general sentiments, and I feel like the levelized method is the best method, just from the standpoint that it seems like we should not be pushing that off on a depreciated out asset and to enforce those customers later on in life to pay the higher amount for that. And I also feel like this gives a better view of what we're looking at for rate impacts on the front end when you actually levelize those out. So
sure.
They're still getting the benefits of the PTCs throughout the life of the project, but we're seeing what that project is actually doing accounting-wise when we're setting their rates. And so I think from the aspect that it seems like it's a more accurate depiction while still allowing the customers to get the benefits of the PTCs, that just from the cleanliness standpoint, it makes more sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems more appropriate.
I like the Shookaluk.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've thought about this, and you know, I think we're beyond the point of, well, do we do this or we don't do this? Because I think that was a more than a valid question. You know, in terms of the difference in a customer billing, the unknown, where I don't know that it would be the wrong thing in 5 years or 10 years, but we just don't know what else is going to be coming our way. not our way per se, but what might happen with different tax incentives and whatnot that's going to be, you know, coming out of the federal, from the federal level. We just don't know. So in terms of, well, what did we want to accomplish? What was the objective? And it was to create consistency in terms of what customers would see from year to year to year to year. And the levelized method really doesn't do that. You've got quite a difference. Victor's method does. It more closely aligns to the objective of rate parity, not subsidizing, having one rate class subsidize another. It just flattens it out. I think that's the objective, isn't it? So anyway, I've looked at both, and if we're going to do anything, I would advocate the Shook look. The Victor method.
Just a little bit different angle, though. Maybe to the same conclusion. I think the line looks flatter, so it seems like it's more consistent. Because, I mean, in retrospect, I wish the commission had done this 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the completely levelized method would be completely consistent with unsubsidized or minimally subsidized projects. And is the most fair, and you keep adding new ones, and so the jump starts and then tapers down. And so I like that, but it wasn't started immediately. Some of these are just a few years into it, and so yeah, the jump is pretty big right now. And when I look at four customers, and it's not unusual. A lot of the reason we have a commerce department in the state is to do special things to get, you know, some of these large entities and stuff. And I don't know, I've never been in the position to have those kinds of utility bills. Maybe if you're paying a $450,000 a month utility bill, $470,000 doesn't jump out at you with a 5% increase. But it seems pretty substantial to me. And so even though I think that the ultimate overall perfectly right thing to do is the completely levelized system, I don't think we can let the perfect get in the way of doing something really, really good and make this move and go to the Shook look and fix most of the problem and yet not devastate anyone.
Sure.
Well, so what couldn't we consider or entertain doing the, since the levelized has some pretty significant benefits and doesn't appear to cause as many significant problems for Autotel and Excel, use it for Autotel and Excel and use the Shook look for MDU?
You know, I would be, I right up until this moment, I didn't want to do that. But then I thought about, well, MDU is already different in that they have this contract rate tariffs.
Right.
So I think I do find an acceptable reason to do an exception.
I think that would, that is fine if that's what the commission would like to do. And I think to I believe to a degree that would make sense if we're looking at it as moving, we want to keep our policies consistent, but if we're viewing it as a move, we're moving in that direction for mm-hmm. one company separately with gradualism in mind. That seems like a pragmatic and appropriate approach if you did want to treat one separately as a result of that.
Okay. So what are the, I mean, are there any other concerns with doing that that you guys want to air?
Actually, just based on Autotel's filing and what they provided, it seems like they still might have some additional concerns if it isn't the levelized method.
Yeah. So
from ease of for probably staff to put something together, it might be easier, whereas there's less things to hash out for those two companies.
Because Excel liked the levelized a lot more, too.
And Excel did like the levelized as well. And MDU, I believe, and they're differently situated as well, so we could treat them differently and work with them individually.
I think if of the Victor and the levelized method, I think all of them preferred the levelized,
mm-hmm.
just because it's easier to administer. There's less calculations.
Sure.
But yes, all of them, I think, would give me.
But if we did the exception on MDU, I think it's pretty justifiable in the fact that they have these different tariffs and these very unique customers.
I imagine there would still be a lot of details to hash out to get to the Victor's method.
Yeah. Another thing to kind of think about with those contract customers, not all of them, but a lot of them just saw an increase mm-hmm. as we made them renegotiate their rates as well. So kind of stacking an increase on top of an increase for some of them. So,
yeah, it would be significant.
Right. Yeah, that's worth noting as well.
I'd have to think about it. In terms of having different methods for different companies to... You know, I really went back and forth on whether or not, you know, just conceptually, I think it's a good idea, but I just had a lot of challenges in terms of as I was thinking through the process, and you know, it's the right thing today, and I'm sure it would be fascinating to listen to the commission's thoughts back in 2008 when Otter Tail requested to do something essentially like this, and they said no.
I tried to look that up. I couldn't find anything.
Right. And so they were probably having the exact opposite contrarian type conversation related to it. And in 10 years, another commission could have yet another view. But, you know, we don't know. It's just probably more.
I did have discussions with the previous director of economic regulation and the previous commissioner about this, and so we could probably discuss this. I don't want to play telephone in a work session, but it'd be worthwhile to have this discussion later.
Right. Okay. Well, where to next? What else do we need at this point in time?
I think direction to staff, and it seems like the appropriate approach would you guys provide direction to staff, which as a commission you guys would like to have staff pursue. Probably also request some additional response from the companies because they didn't have an opportunity to provide some input on, or to give them the opportunity to provide some input on what they've discussed to make sure we've characterized everything correctly. But I think probably just as a commission, some direction to staff of which method would be the best to, or which approach you'd like to do, whether it's two companies, one approach, one company separately, or all three into one single approach.
So, Brian, do you want to think about it, and then next week, if you want another work session, because you aren't coming around to where Randy and I are, if we can have another work session. Or if you think about it and think, okay, I'm amenable to this.
In fairness, Randy just swung around
five minutes ago. Yeah, so. Absolutely. But, I mean, that's where we're at. So we've got 2-1. So either you want to join us or convince us to go the other way.
Right.
In a work session.
Yeah.
So it's up to you.
Yeah. My biggest concern, well, in terms of meeting the overall objective, but also, you know, what was the true intent? Of doing this to begin with, since it was broached. But I want to take a hard look at what does it do to the commercial customers, and we're trying to mitigate that in some way. But then it gets to the point, I don't know what the best way of saying it, we're just getting too cute with all of this. So. That's not the best way of saying it.
Okay.
I think there's another issue.
Okay.
And then Rose can bring it up because... I'm glad with where we're at, but don't we also need to decide on MDU whether we're going to do the true up that was in the initial filing?
2.8. I think it would be good to give direction on that as well. If you're going to direct a particular method, also give direction on the treatment of that.
Because at some point it's got to be trued up, I suppose, or flat out denied.
Did you mean?
No, that was energy? Excel. Not MDU.
No, that's Otter Tail. It's 2.840 million.
MDU had a true up balance from prior period collections of 2.8 million.
Oh.
That was, remember when we started talking about their chart at the beginning, we had noted that they were removing that
right.
from the levelized and Victor methods.
Because it's just a 1 year thing.
Right.
Well, it would they have to. Don't we always true up when we do these?
We do always true up. What they were demonstrating in there is they would basically just kind of hold it off. They would add that amount to essentially to rate base almost for collection in a future period.
Would we have been contemplating that if we just kept the same method? Like if we weren't entertaining?
I don't think that would be likely.
Does every other true ups too?
Every company has true ups. Yeah. MDU's is just larger.
Okay.
There was a couple of things that went on to cause theirs.
But I don't recall you saying that you disagreed with any of them like you did in some of Excel's.
Correct. So okay. The true up is appropriate.
Okay.
And in prior true up cases or renewable tracker update cases, we've always included the true up in the revenue requirement of the following year. So it would be consistent to include, to.
And if we didn't include it this year, then we wouldn't include it next year or the year after. Why would we not do it this year and then do it in future years for MDU or anybody?
I agree.
All right. I mean, to me, unless I miss something, I don't see how you don't do the true up unless the true up numbers are inappropriate.
Right.
But that's not.
But it still comes out in the commission order, I think, ultimately, what you decide on that.
Yeah. So I just want, as you're getting ready to draft an order.
But we also have some other issues that were relating to the Excel, too, on the true up.
Excel's, I don't recall having any issues on Excel's rider or renewable rider. I did have some issues. Yes.
I'm sorry. I got it confused. Okay.
Yeah. And the renewable. Yeah. They're right.
Yep. I had some concerns that we needed to keep an eye on long term as far as their total investment on some of the projects potentially exceeding.
Right.
But at present, everything is in line.
Okay. Thanks for reminding us of that. All right.
When did Thunder Spirit 1 and 2 go into?
2015 and 2017?
That sounds correct. That sounds about right. But some of those wind farms get blurred.
But I think it was like late in 2015.
Very late.
So they've used like 4 years of PTC.
Yeah, they have six. They have 6 years left on Thunder Spirit 1, mm-hmm. and maybe it was late 2018 for Thunder Spirit 2.
Maybe.
There's 6 years left for Thunder Spirit 1. I believe it was 9 years left for Thunder Spirit 2.
That sounds right.
Okay. All right, so
well, I'm going to probably have to start with you, Jack, and since Victor can't do much of a dive into, you can answer some basic questions, but you can't give me an opinion.
So. Correct.
And Adam, how closely have you been following all of this? Are you on top of it?
I'm just catching up on it.
Okay. Then Jack, it's you.
Sure.
Okay.
And the last thing I'd like to throw in on these. I mean, if we can't get them all done, then I think it's good to get at least two done. And if we can't get two done, at least one done. But to whatever extent we can get these done by that approximate mid-February standpoint, whatever the impacts are going to be this year are going to be that much less if we can start it in March instead of April.
Right.
So,
is there any is there an argument on MDUs since we're looking at a substantial true-up? Wouldn't that normally occur at the end of the year anyway? Right?
The true-ups are generally calculated at the end of the period, so yeah. Yes.
So, is there an argument to get them trued up and implemented at a different, you know, at the beginning of 2021?
I mean, holding off a whole additional year?
Taking care of the true-up, not having this condensed first year, which is going to make it a little on the wavy side, but not significantly. Or maybe I'm thinking of Excel's. No, I'm thinking of Excel's chart.
To a certain extent, you'd be banking on that everything comes out the other direction next year. And
no.
It's possible you could have a true-up balance of equal or larger size next year.
Right.
So then you'd be in a worse position.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
Could be.
But, I mean, ratepayers are going to get hit with a true-up amount anyway.
Well, you get hit with a true-up, but the longer you wait to start a different method, the less impactful it is.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. You're talking in terms of future ratepayers.
Just in general, I mean, you know, those charts, those lines all get closer and closer together the farther out you are.
Yep, yep. No,
but also, the longer you wait to do it, the more impactful a rate increase could be if you're using true ups from 2 years versus one.
Yep. Absolutely.
I believe it would be abnormal to wait till 2021. It would probably be inconsistent, at least with past commission practices, but not undoable.
With the true-up amount.
Right.
But we don't have a consistency in terms of applying a new accounting treatment, because this is new. Okay. I don't have anything else. Randy, Julie?
No, I'm good.
Anything else you want to add? Or
I think this just leaves us that we'll discuss it again. Then.
Yes.
Okay.
So you're gone Monday, Tuesday next week, is that correct? Are you around next week, or are you gone?
Wednesday and Thursday, I'm here.
You're here Wednesday, Thursday. You're here Wednesday, Thursday?
Yes.
Oh, at least Wednesday. It'll take me a minute.
I mean, we have a commission meeting on Wednesday. Wait, no. Never mind. Wrong week.
Right, the chili cook-off.
Chili cook-off. Woohoo!
Maybe we should try and target...
We have a work session that morning on Thursday, so it would be one that we could probably do another one after that.
Mm-hmm. You know, then we're on Thursday afternoon. At what point are we too late for them to get their information and to accomplish the goal in February? Is there still plenty of time, you think, if we didn't make a decision on this till next Thursday?
I think we're still okay at next Thursday. I think in the meantime, between now and then, I can have them further explore the opinion of the couple of the commissioners, where two of them are looking at levelized, one at a Victor method, just starting to flush those out a little bit more, but just with the idea that those may not be the final decisions.
It's still almost 3 weeks from our 19th meeting, which is the one we were targeting.
I'm available on Wednesday, and I have the same stuff as you guys do on Thursday. So
even trying to squeeze another meeting in either Thursday morning, Thursday afternoon, right after the chili cook-off? Okay.
I have a 1 o'clock OMS meeting on Thursday, but otherwise I'm available.
Just say no. Just say no to OMS. Okay.
So is are you thinking 10 a.m. on Thursday after the railroad?
How much, do you know, how much time do you think we'll need for the railroad?
I think an hour would be, we can do what we can in an hour, and if you guys have more questions, we can set up another one.
So why don't we go 10 o'clock and, yeah, because I don't think in terms of setup for the chili cook-off. I mean, if people are coming in and out to set a crock pot up quietly, that's fine.
I mean, usually they just plug them in their office or something and bring them all down.
That's true.
Closer to 12.
So they're not sabotaged because this is a high-stakes chili cook-off.
Yes, exactly. Somebody could dump
that's what happened to mine
sugar
last time.
In it or something.
I knew it.
Extra Tabasco or salt like
it's
beans.
Like jalapenos. I never put jalapeno. Did I put jalapeno? All right.
Someone's got a Tabasco.
Well, now that that's been brought up, I would tell everyone, guard your chili.
Probably all these chilies with chains and locks.
I'm bringing mine into the work session. None of you can be trusted.
Brian will be here like this.
I'm going to confirm we're doing 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock, yes, on the
30th.
Yes. 10 a.m. 30th, 2020. Okay, thanks, everyone.